3099 on the agenda this morning, Senator Berglund. And members, we have a variety of material we've passed out, the bill obviously, an extensive fiscal note, some other supplemental material. So, Senator Berglund, however you'd like to proceed.
Mr. Chairman, do we have a quorum?
No. How environmental legislation isn't doing well and a variety of stuff.
No revolution.
No, we do not.
Would you let me know when we do? Mr. Chairman and members, this bill, Senate File 3099, has several components to it. The first component is a public health component. We know that the rising rates of obesity and smoking drive chronic diseases that cost the healthcare system a lot. In fact, it's estimated that by 2020, obesity in Minnesota could be costing us nearly $4 billion in additional healthcare costs.
Senator Berglund, you asked, we do have a quorum now.
Mr. Chairman, then I'd like to move the division report.
Okay, we have Senator Berglund's motion to Senator Betzold.
Senator Pappas and one from Senator Berglund.
Well, we should.
The Health and Human Services.
It should be the Health and Human Services Division report.
Right. I have two of them in our packet, so one from.
This shows a recommendation.
I don't believe there were any amendments made in Senator Pappas's division, so. This motion would be to get the bill in the form that the summary says committee engrossment.
Okay, do we have further questions on Senator Berglund's motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Berglund.
And then, Mr. Chairman, I have an A35 amendment.
E12.
Okay. Page.
All right, if we could have the A34, we're distributing a lot of material.
This amendment, Mr. Chairman, is just a reworking of the public health improvement assessment portion of Article 1. Mr. Watson went over it and reorganized it to make it a little more understandable.
Did he do that just with this section or the entire bill?
This section.
Sixth. That's what we're talking about right now.
Should have the whole bill.
We're doing what?
Have we had the A35 amendment distributed?
So this amendment makes no substantive changes.
Does not?
It does not.
Okay, we have Senator Berglund's motion to adopt the A35 amendment. Is there further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Berglund.
Okay, then, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the public health article creates a statewide health improvement program. It will consist of grants that will be made to all the communities in Minnesota. The grants will be made in three phases. First is a planning grant. The next is a grant to flesh out your plan, and then the third is funding the actual plan. And this is a grant program that is outcome-based, so communities will be measured according to their performance. And this piece of the bill is expected to have long-run savings in our healthcare system. This part of the bill is financed by an assessment on not-for-profit hospitals and health plans. The first year, we will generate about $20 million, and the next 4 years after that, it'll be $40 million each year. And then after that, we anticipate that we'll have other sources of funding in the bill that we can dedicate to this if the program is successful. This has been piloted with federal funding in four communities across Minnesota. It's been very successful so far in those communities. The next article begins the phase of the bill that deals with payment reform and health care cost containment. Healthcare homes is one of the features of the payment reform. A healthcare home is a physician or team of medical providers who are keeping track of all of the patient's chronic diseases, helping to provide services in the community to keep them out of the hospital. An example of this is two pilots that we have in Minnesota, one taking place out of Methodist Hospital and the other taking place out of St. Mary's in Duluth. In both cases, they have nurses that call people who have cardiac disease on a daily basis, help them with monitoring their blood pressure and their weight, and through that mechanism, help them determine if they're keeping true to the diet they need to be on in order to prevent a hospitalization. And they've seen 80% reduction in hospitalizations. But they lost $1 million on the program because the things that they needed to provide for people are not paid for through the payment system today. So this medical home will provide for a medical management payment to the provider that will vary based on the complexity of the population served. This will mean that our fee-for-service population in our Medicaid program would be moving into this healthcare home model. We have a number of provisions in the bill then that also will expand access to our public programs and create a new mechanism for people to have more affordable insurance in the private marketplace as well. There's a section in the bill that increases automation and coordination of our state health care program eligibility and renewals with other social services programs like WIC, school lunch program, and other ways that we can cross-match people that are in our public health care program with people that we know are eligible for the program and do special efforts of outreach to those that are not enrolled in our public health care programs. We have provisions in here that reduce asset verification in our Minnesota Care program, allow delayed verification for our Minnesota Care program, provide an additional month of eligibility for Minnesota Care enrollees who fail to renew in a timely manner. We increase the Minnesota Care annual inpatient hospital limit. We eliminate the $50,000 income limit for parents, and we eliminate the four-month requirement that people be uninsured before they go into Minnesota Care. We establish a new Minnesota Care premium scale based on the affordability standard that was adopted by the Governor's Transformation Commission. And we also waive premiums for people in Minnesota Care that otherwise would be eligible for medical assistance. We exempt new households that would be applying for Minnesota Care for the first time from the Minnesota Care premium for the first month. We provide a grace month of coverage for persons who fail to pay their Minnesota Care premiums. And we have a study in here to help us determine how much it would cost through our reimbursement system to provide health insurance for all of the long-term care workers in the state. We have a provision in here that allows the commissioner of health to use the loan forgiveness program for dentists who agree to deliver at least 20% of their patient services to public program enrollees. That is dropping that percentage by 5% it will bring it in line with the disproportionate share payments for dentists in the state. It also allows those who have been trained in a foreign country to receive a license from the Board of Dentistry if they agree to provide services to a nonprofit organization, community clinic, or qualified clinic for at least 3 years. They can also receive the loan forgiveness for becoming certified in this country. It allows up to 3 scholarships per year for dentists to be provided. The scholarships will be at least $30,000 each year. Apparently, the armed services are offering scholarships to people who go into dentistry through the armed forces, and so we have a little competition there, and this will help us be more competitive in that area. Next section of the bill deals with health insurance purchasing and affordability, and I'm going to turn this section, this explanation, over to Senator Rosen.
Okay, Senator Rosen.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. The Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange was a recommendation that came out of the Transformation Task Force and the Healthcare Access Legislative Access Commission. It would provide education, outreach, and technical assistance for individuals and employees related to the health insurance options and the advantages of paying for health insurance through a Section 125 plan. It'd be similar to like a market organizer. Right now, there's not a single place where individuals or a small employer can go statewide for options. So this would be offered to a small employer market or individual with less than 50 employees. And they would offer a maximum of 3 individual plans and 3 smaller health benefit plans. MSHA would be available through the exchange, and the plans offered through Minnesota Care will be available for individuals and families with income equal to or greater than 200% of federal poverty guideline. It also must meet the eligibility requirements for Minnesota Care and pay premiums through an employer Section 125 plan. The plans would be listed on the Internet, and, of course, you have to be a Minnesota resident or the Minnesota connection. The responsibilities of the exchange would be to serve as a coordinating entity for enrollment and collection and transfer of these premium payments for the health plans. They would also publicize the eligibility rules and enrollment procedures. They'd help the employers establish the Section 125 plan, create a system for purchasers to easily compare plans. They would handle the billing and transfer of the premiums of the participants and provide information on the public insurance program offered. The exchange would be governed by 11 members for the Commissioner of Commerce, Human Services, and Health, 2 members from the Senate, 2 members from the House, and 4 members appointed by the governor. And it would have a director who would oversee the entire exchange. The exchange is not the only place where the policies can be sold. There would be no price difference between what is sold inside and outside the exchange. And brokers would receive their commission for products sold in and out of the exchange. There would be a 0.5% assessment on the premium to fund the exchange operations. The Section 125 plan allows employers to establish a plan so the employees can pay for the health insurance coverage with pre-tax dollars. All employees with 11 or more employees must establish a Section 125 plan to allow the employees to purchase this individual market or employer-based health plan coverage with pre-tax dollars. The employers can set up a 125 plan relatively cheap, $300 to $400, and this gives an opportunity for the employers to offer something to their employees. There is a guaranteed issue window in this bill, and that would establish a 1-month guaranteed issue window for certain people in Minnesota. It would apply to the people who buy an individual market health plan through a Section 125 plan. These are the only people to whom the guaranteed issue window applies. And they can contribute these funds pre-tax to a Section 125 plan for the purposes of their employees buying individual coverage. However, federal law may construe that contribution to mean the employer is establishing a group plan. Federal non-discrimination law says that the group plans cannot deny coverage to a single member group and must not vary premiums based on certain factors. This would also open up the opportunity for people who are not insured at all to get into this window.
So, Mr. Chairman, the purpose of the...
Senator Thomasoni.
Chairman, Senator Rosen, let me see if I understood that. The employer sets up the 125 plan. Does the employer contribute to the plan, or is it just employees only?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Thomasoni, in this bill, the only employers that are required to establish a 125 plan are those that are size 11 to 50 who do not provide health insurance for their employees. They're not required to contribute toward the insurance for their employees, but they are required to establish a 125 benefit.
Can they contribute to the plan for their employees?
Yes, they can. And those who already do provide for their employees could set up a 125 plan and use the exchange to administer it, but they're not required to. And the purpose, Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomasoni, for this is to give those employees access to that tax benefit, which means that they would have about a 20 to 50% less cost to their insurance because they'd be buying on a pre-tax basis.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, then the next section of the bill establishes a Healthcare Transformation Commission. We have handed out a little organizational chart here that makes it a little easier for people to understand. The Healthcare Transformation Commission is a temporary organization. It will coordinate the components of the transformation payment reform. It will report on how we are doing in terms of containing health care cost growth and improving health care quality. And it will make recommendations to the legislature and the governor about any mid-course corrections that might be needed in the program. Under the Healthcare Transformation Commission will be a healthcare value reporting organization that will create the standards for measuring outcomes of providers, and will also measure and make recommendations for risk adjustment. There also will be a health benefit and design advisory committee. They will be coming up with a healthcare value benefit set, and they will collaborate with both the health exchange as well as our state programs. There will be a technology advisory committee that will evaluate new and existing technologies to make sure that the technologies that we're paying for are both efficacious and safe. Then we have the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. As Senator Rosen explained, it has appointments from the legislature as well as the governor. The Healthcare Transformation Commission will have two legislators on it, as well as appointments from the governor and the legislature, as well as two commissioners. Now I'm going to just go into a little bit more of the payment restructuring. In addition to the medical home component, which would be not just for our public programs, but we would be encouraging private insurance to create medical homes for their patients with chronic diseases as well. Then we would be moving into a price transparency, quality and transparency phase of the reform, where instead of having individual providers negotiating a lot of different prices with insurance companies, they would be setting their own price, and they would have the same price for everyone, and it would be a transparent price so that you would know and you would be able to compare your provider to other providers. healthcare providers also would be submitting bids based on a total cost of care, so that we would then be able to translate all the prices into what the premium would become at the insurance company level. All providers would be paid for all the services that they provide, but if they are able to get waste out of the system and be more efficient, then the cost that they are posting, then they would be able to keep additional revenues as a result of their efficiencies. Contrary, if they go over their price, then they would have some amount of their price withheld in order to make sure that they meet their bid price. They would have an opportunity to rebid every year and either increase or decrease their prices. And the bidding would only become public after providers knew where they stood in relationship to other providers that were also bidding so that they could adjust their price at that point in time if they wanted to. During the period of 2009, we would have prices sort of as an aggregate price being disclosed. Providers would not be making one price available to everyone they serve, but we would take all the prices that they do have and combine them to get sort of an average composite price. So we would begin comparing prices, but it would not it would be phased in over over several years. We then would have a point in time where everyone would be in this level of payment reform, and that would be 2011. During 2012, there would be a corridor. Providers could not bid more than 2% higher than they had their prices in the previous year, nor could they bid more than 15% lower than their price had been in the previous year. And that's to make sure that people in the first year of total implementation are not gaming the system. We have cost containment goals in the bill. I have handed out a sheet that shows you what the Healthcare Transformation Commission felt would be possible with this savings program. It looks like this. It's a vertical chart. But the actual goals in the bill are a little lower than that, and there's a sheet like this that shows you what they would be. It says Senate File 3099 goals. And so we would be reducing healthcare spending over a number of years. There is a mechanism in the bill to recapture a third of the savings and reinvest them in state programs, such as paying for the 125 tax benefit, such as paying for the uninsured and underinsured, such as creating more positions within our higher educational institutions for primary care providers to be graduating, loan forgiveness, and other areas that we feel are important in order to fully implement the reform. If we meet the affordability standard, we may increase our eligibility for our programs to 300% of poverty within MinnesotaCare and up to 400% of poverty within the exchange or through other mechanisms. We do have a program to plan for subsidizing employer coverage. We do believe that the insurance exchange will give us a mechanism where that can be administered fairly easily. So, for example, if an individual has a $2,000 deductible, but paying that deductible is unaffordable for them, then there could be subsidies that would be provided in addition to the 125 benefit within the insurance exchange. And that is basically, Mr. Chairman, concludes the summary of the bill. We do have a couple of other amendments that we would need to adopt, and then we can go through the spreadsheets. The first one is an A33 amendment.
If we could have that distributed.
I
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, this is an amendment that was requested by the MCCL, and we have no objection to it. It just makes it clear that technology assessment criteria is not going to be designed in a way that it would deny services to people based on their disability or their health condition.
Okay, we have Senator Berglund's motion on the A33 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Then I have the A34 amendment.
It's already been passed out.
That's been distributed somewhere.
Yeah. And the A34 amendment is the appropriations
did everybody find
article.
That? Senator Betzel.
We have it. Mr. Chair, I just want to make a very minor change. Page 9, line 20. It refers to unless a different expiration date is explicit. I'm not sure we use the term explicit. I think specified would be a better word.
As in the 9.23?
Page 9, line 20.
Specified and explicit.
Want to change that to what?
Specified.
Specified?
Yeah.
All right.
I'll incorporate that into the amendment.
We have Senator Berglund's motion on the A34 amendment. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, does this fill in all of the blanks that I was noticing in the committee engrossment? Okay. I didn't have time to look at all of them, but I just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
We have Senator Berglund's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Godfrey to go through the spreadsheet with us.
Mr. Godfrey.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is David Godfrey, Senate Fiscal Analyst. I'm just going to walk through the spreadsheet. It's about 8 pages long, and it says Senate File 3099 in the corner. Looks like this.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Fischbach. Mr. Chair, and I don't know if this is the appropriate time, but I've got a lot of preliminary fiscal notes. I'm wondering if we have final fiscal notes, since this is Finance Committee and it's moving on. Do we have everything all put together at this point? Maybe this isn't the appropriate time to ask the question, but I thought since we were moving into the finances of it.
Senator Fischbach, obviously this is a piece of complicated legislation. Senator Berglund has been working on that. But Mr. Mossman, did you wish to comment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, what I do know as of this morning, the Department of Finance, who coordinates fiscal notes, has signed off on the larger agencies' pieces of the bill. So the Department of Human Services, Department of Health, and the Department of Revenue fiscal notes have been signed off on. That would leave the Office of Higher Education, or I'm sorry, the University of Minnesota, and DUER, which had elements that they were looking at. So in terms of your question, the major components of the bill as of this morning have been signed off on by the Department of Finance, and I believe they're here as well.
Mr. Chair, is it the intention to pass it through without having final fiscal notes?
Well, Senator Fischbach, I think that was the point Mr. Mossman made, is that, in effect, we have the final fiscal note for almost the entirety of the bill. We can certainly have, I guess what I'd like is to have Mr. Godfrey go through the spreadsheet, and then certainly if you wish to ask some questions, either to have finance up here to talk about what's titled the preliminary fiscal note, and then have some questions about the particulars of the University of Minnesota and DUER, we can certainly do that.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Godfrey?
Mr. Chair, members, this spreadsheet it shows the net changes in appropriation that result in the bill. And beginning on line 2, you'll see a summary, total all agencies, of what the bill has in terms of new net changes in appropriations. You'll see that the only numbers on line 5, $3.3 million from the Healthcare Access Fund in fiscal year 09, and $253.7 million in 10 and 11. This bill also appropriates money for the a new fund called the Health Savings Reinvestment Fund and also the Health Improvement Fund. And those show up as zeros here because there's offsetting revenue in the fiscal note that doesn't create really a net new change in spending. And we'll see those later on in the spreadsheet. Then moving down to line 22, you'll see a summary of the Healthcare Access Fund balance. The balance at the end of 11 would be zero, but it also leaves on the bottom line $93.9 million. That's for a health transformation reserve in fiscal year 11. And then you'll see a summary of the net changes by agencies going on to the second page. And beginning on line 88, I'll just go through the changes for the Department of Human Services. The first item is an appropriation of $168,000 in fiscal year 09 for application and renewal automation system from the Healthcare Access Fund. And it also spends money in 10 and 11. $122,000. It's expected that this provision would sunset at the end of 11. Next, on line 101, is a appropriation for healthcare homes. The net appropriation here is zero. However, the item does spend $1.3 million from a transfer from the Health Savings Reinvestment Fund, which you'll see later in the spreadsheet, in 10 and 1.6 in 11. And this is to cover the DHS costs associated with creating the healthcare homes for their programs. On line 114 is a provision for Minnesota Care to establish a one-month rolling eligibility component to the program that has a small cost for implementation in 09 of $345,000 and a cost in 10 and 11 of $9.2 million from the Healthcare Access Fund. On line 122 is another Minnesota Care provision for delayed verification. Again, a small appropriation of $171,000 for implementation in 08-09 and $1.9 million in 10 and 11. On line 131 is to raise the Minnesota Care inpatient hospital cap from $10,000 to $20,000. That costs $3.1 million in 08-09 and $19.7 million in 10 and 11 from the Healthcare Access Fund. On 138 is the Minnesota Care families with kids raising their eligibility to 300% to poverty with a premium reduction and also the repeal of the $5,000 income household cap. And that small cost in 09 is $148,000 and $12.4 in 10 and 11. On 147 is to raise the Minnesota Care Adults Without Children eligibility to 300% of poverty and also include a premium reduction that creates a cost in 10 and 11 of $10.2 million. Then turning to page 4, line 156 is to eliminate Minnesota Care premiums for children below 150% of poverty and parents below 100% of poverty. And that has a cost in 09 of $414,000. And in 10 and 11, $21.1 million. On line 165 is to create in Minnesota Care a premium grace month, cost of $339,000 in 08-09, $19.2 million in 10 and 11. On 172 is the elimination of the Minnesota Care four-month barrier with a cost in 10 and 11 of $56.5 million. On line 180 is to waive the first-month premium for Minnesota Care. Small cost of for implementation in 09 of $356,000, and then cost in 10 and 11 of $13.9 million. On line 189 is Minnesota Care Outreach Incentive Funding, and this has a cost of $3.9 million in 10 and 11. Page 5, line 198, is a small cost one time for the Department of Human Services to set up their program to deal with the insurance exchange. It's $112,000 in 09. On line 204 is a one-time appropriation for long-term care work insurance study of $422,000 in fiscal year 09. On line 211 is a physician rate increase for providers in rural and underserved areas. That's $200,000 in fiscal year 09.
If I can just stop, David, Sarah for a Berlin. Minute. This this is another way of doing loan forgiveness, only instead of having it all be state funds, by doing it through a rate increase, we can get federal financing for half of it. And this item in the bill will create 13 new loan forgiveness slots in rural Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, members, continuing on that item, the 10 and 11 cost for that is $400,000. On line 217 is the ESI subsidies for Minnesota Care eligibles. This is essentially the first year appropriation of $720,000 to study the implementation of a system that would provide subsidies to people who are eligible by income for Minnesota Care but currently have employer-sponsored insurance. And then in 10 and 11, the amount is $55 million to actually provide those subsidies. And on line 225 is the one-time appropriation for an open-door health center clinic, and that's in the Mankato area. And this is from a Senator Sharon bill, Senate file 2631, and the amount is $350,000 in fiscal year 09. On line 231 is the appropriation for the Molar Express, which is a mobile dental clinic, for $500,000 in fiscal year 09. On line 237 is the elimination of the sunset for the waiver of Minnesota Care premiums for military members and their families. And this was supposed to sunset after fiscal year 10. This just continues the program at a cost of $1.7 million in fiscal year 11. Turning to page 6 is the last DHS item. This is the elimination of the Minnesota Care add-back of depreciation for farmers, making this item effective July 1st, 2008. Originally, it was supposed to be effective, in the current forecast, it's supposed to be effective in fiscal year 2010 because we have to wait to get a federal waiver. This would accelerate that the implementation of this item in the next fiscal year by providing state-only funds for this program in just fiscal year 09. Then on line 253, we move to the Department of Health. On line 255 is the establishment of the Healthcare Transformation Commission. This is a one-time appropriation of $12 million from the Healthcare Access Fund. On line 261 is the establishment of the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange, also a one-time appropriation in fiscal year 09 of $8 million. On line 267 is the appropriation for the statewide health improvement program. This is a $20 million appropriation, 18.6 of which in 09 is for grants. And then in fiscal year 10 and 11, the amount of the appropriation increases to $40 million each year, with $37.2 million going to grants annually. Then on line 280 is the health improvement assessment. This is the assessment to hospitals and health plans, and this would pay for the statewide health improvement program. You see that the revenue coming in on line 282 is $2 million in 09 and $40 million in each year in 10 and 11.
And it's almost
done. It's $20 million in 09 and $40 million each year in 10 and 11. On line 285 is the health savings reinvestment assessment uniform billing portion. This is the other assessment that is included in the bill, which is applied to savings that are created as a result of some initiatives that the state is undertaking and then recaptured a third of which goes to the state. And this represents the savings that will result from the uniform billing portion of the bill and some of the uniform and administrative uniformity activities the Department of Health has undertaken. And this shows that the assessment will bring in on line 288, $2.8 million in 10 and then $7.1 million in 11. And there's a small net savings in 10 of $736,000 because that money is not appropriated in this bill. And we'll just sit in the fund. On line 293 is some administrative costs to deal with the fund. This is coming from the health savings reinvestment fund, and the cost in fiscal year 10 is $302,000. On line 298 is the revenue loss from the creation of the Section 125 plans. Revenue expects this loss to be incurred in fiscal year 2011 in order to get the general fund the $6.2 million to cover it from the health savings reinvestment fund. There's a small transfer made in fiscal year 10 of $742,000, and then the balance is transferred in fiscal year 11 of $5.5 million for the total of $6.2 million in the biennium. Next on line 304 is the healthcare homes effort by the Department of Health. This is to support the creation of healthcare homes statewide, and this is a $1.1 million appropriation from the Healthcare Access Fund in 09 and a $3.4 million appropriation in 10 and 11. Next on line 311 is the eHealth Records Grant Loan Program. This is a continuation of an initiative that was recommended by the governor last year and passed by the legislature. This adds $4 million in 09 to the base of the program, and then $7.8 million in 10, and then it continues the program into 11 because it was originally scheduled to sunset in 10 for an amount of $7.8 million. On line 318 is the Dental Scholarship Program. This is a bill from Senator Dahl, Senate File 3122, and it's an appropriation of $400,000 annually. On line 325 is the subsidies for federal qualified health clinics, and this is in addition to the base that they currently receive. The base is currently $1.5 million. This would add another $4 million annually to that base. And Mr. Chair, that's the spreadsheet.
Okay, questions on the spreadsheet? Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund or Senator Rosen, I see in a couple places that there are references to the lottery prize fund and the environmental fund. What are you doing with those funds, and why are they on this spreadsheet?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, I can answer that. This is the template that we use for all of our health and human services spreadsheets. We actually don't have any appropriation for them provided for in here, but in the past we have appropriated funds from those funds in other budget bills. And so it probably would have been helpful if I would just have kept on the sheet the funds that we're actually appropriating for, but they actually are of no consequence in this bill. It's just that our standard spreadsheet that we use includes them.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, another question. What is the federally qualified health clinic subsidies that's in addition to the funds that we have now? Is that correct?
Yes.
So that would be about almost doubling what they get?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Higgins, this is the amount we had when we went into conference committee last year for them. Clearly there's a need. We have a lot of, we have increased number of uninsured people since the year 2002 in Minnesota, and because of our tight budget limit last year, most of what they were asking for had to be eliminated from the bill.
There are two in my district, and they do wonderful work, so thank you.
Chairman.
Sir Mitzen.
Is there anything, thank you, Mr. Chairman, in this bill that would encourage people to buy, or any tax credits or savings to buy, or to purchase long-term health care? Any incentives in here today? Or is there going to be a study or anything? My point is that we want to encourage people to purchase long-term health care. And now I think you buy it, you might get $100 tax credit, and it might cost you $2,000 or $3,000 a year to purchase it. Well, if you encourage people to buy it, obviously at the other end it's going to save the taxpayers $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, isn't it? Right? You know, I'm guessing at those numbers, but I'm wondering if that was addressed in here, or we're going to look at it. Does that make sense? I mean, it seems to me we've got to give incentives for people to purchase long-term health care. I mean, it's common sense that it's going to save millions and millions at the end of the day.
Sir Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Mattson, not in this bill.
Okay.
Last year we passed legislation to allow people to be a part of what we call the Long-Term Care Partnership Program, and that will help more middle-class people purchase insurance because they can line it up with the Medicaid program so that when they can buy a policy that has a lower level of benefits, and when they exhaust those benefits, then Medicaid would kick in, and they can protect that level that their long-term care insurance has provided. They can protect their assets to that degree without having to lose them to go into the Medicaid program. And those rules and those riders to policies are just being approved by the Department of Commerce now. So that's just coming online now. And so I believe we should see how that works.
Sure.
And it should be a big boon to people that otherwise maybe haven't been able to afford long-term care insurance. The other piece we have in here is for our long-term care workers. Many of our long-term care workers don't have health insurance, and we do have money for a study in here to figure out how much we would need to increase the reimbursement in the long-term care area to make sure that all our long-term care workers could get insurance through their jobs.
Okay. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, the other thing I just wanted to mention is the e-health records, loans, and grants. There is a provision in the bill that I think it's by 2010 that everyone doing business with the state will be doing e-prescribing, and by 2012, everyone in the state doing business with the state would be doing full e-health records. And so we felt that for some of those small rural providers, we needed to provide a little bit more in the area of loans and grants for them to get into the e-health business.
Okay. Further questions, Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I want to zero in on this insurance exchange for a moment. And there was several things that it's going to do. And the one thing I was going to specifically ask was this guaranteed issue comment that Senator Rosen made that would be available for, I think she said, 1 month. But in addition to that, I just kind of want to have an image in my mind as to what this is. Is this some place in the Department of Health that's going to have a sign over the door that says insurance exchange that's going to do these functions, or is there going to be an insurance exchange in various places across the state, or what can I – I want to have an image in my mind as to what this exchange looks like and where it's going to be.
Mr. Chairman, it will be a not-for-profit organization. It will not be a function of state government. State government will help it to get started, and then after that, it will function without any state money being put into it.
Will it be in a building or someplace in the Twin Cities area? Is it one place, or is it going to be several places?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dill, I don't think that's been determined, but they would have a website that would be statewide so that people who don't have insurance today offered by their small employer who get the benefit of the 125 pre-tax benefit could go online and figure out what kind of policy they wanted, and the exchange would be comparing policies in the and they would categorize them as a fairly comprehensive benefit, a medium benefit, or a lower benefit. And you could decide what you wanted to purchase based on what you felt your needs were and what you could afford. It will administer the 125 benefit for small employers so that they don't have to worry about how their one employee goes with this insurance company, another with that one, another with that one. They would have it all administered through the insurance exchange so that the small employer doesn't have to worry about administering any of it.
Okay.
And it would help people understand what the 125 benefit would mean to them before they sign up so they'd know how much out-of-pocket they would have to spend for an insurance policy.
There was a comment that Senator Rosen made about guarantee issue for only 1 month. What does that mean?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dill, you would have a guaranteed issue period of time where you would not be excluded because of any pre-existing condition. There might be a period of time in the policy where you would not have certain conditions covered until you had the insurance for a period of time. Well, the reason for that is we don't want people to just buy insurance when they think they're going to be sick. But it would have a guaranteed issue feature in it so that employees that might have a health condition that otherwise would prevent them from buying insurance in the individual market today, they would be able to buy insurance through this mechanism.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Did we adopt the A34 amendment?
Yes,
we did. Senator Berglund or Mr. Godfrey, is the A34 amendment reflected in the spreadsheet?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, yes, it should. The
Where is the section about the family practice physicians then? I didn't hear you go through that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, that's on the first page on line 14.
Okay.
Other provisions. Just okay. Noting that it's a contingent appropriation of
right.
$2.5 million in 10 and 11, but it doesn't add into our numbers because it's contingent.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, another yes. question. Senator Berglund or Mr. Godfrey, is there any general fund spending in this bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, there are a couple of – well, there is one general fund appropriation, which is for the healthcare homes. But that item, which you can find on line 101, beginning at 101, is covered by a transfer into the general fund of revenue of $2.9 million in 10 and 11 from the Health Savings Reinvestment Fund to cover the cost of that item. So it's really no new general fund spending. It's just it's activity in the medical assistance program. We need to convert the funding from this Health Savings Reinvestment Fund into the general fund so the department can spend it correctly.
Mr. Chairman, just one more question.
Senator Pappas.
Senator Berglund, then, how much money are you spending this biennium, if any, from the Health Care Access Fund? Is there a total?
Yes, we are spending money from the Health Care Access Fund, and we are most of it's being spent on getting more people insured. So we have numbers for both what our spending is and what the new number of people that will be insured will be.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, on line number 5 of page 1, you'll see the spending for the Health Care Access Fund. In 09, it's 38.3, and then in 10 and 11, it's $253.7 million.
Okay.
What's the balance?
And what do we have for the uninsured that we're getting out of the bill?
It's about 27,000.
About 27,000 more people insured.
Mr. Mossman?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, on the general fund question, there's also, in the tails, there would be the impact, the activity in the general fund related to the Section 125 plans. That revenue loss is initially, the initial incidence of that falls on the general fund, and then there's language that the general fund would get reimbursed for that also. And I'm looking for it, I think, and that's reflected on the spreadsheet, that transaction also, and I think lines 297 starting with Mr. Godfrey's spreadsheet.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Senator Irwin, or Mr. Godfrey, how much comes into that health care access fund every year?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, for fiscal year 09, for instance, the total revenues in the fund are forecasted to be $556 million, and then it grows actually to 11 to $640 million. And it often grows because it's based on mostly on the provider tax revenue, which accounts for health care inflation.
So then, Mr. Chair, Mr. Godfrey, this would... In fiscal year 10 and 11, it would take about a quarter of the income that's going to come in those 2 years. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, that's roughly correct, yes.
Roughly correct, okay. So will we still be keeping a healthy surplus in the Health Care Access Fund even after doing this?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Higgins, that's why we have a reserve on the spreadsheet, because when you expand eligibility or you do things to help people get enrolled, there is a period of growth for that, and we want to make sure we can cover that growth in the bienniums that are not shown on the spreadsheet.
So did they say how much? Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I'm not sure that I got the... I heard the answer to the question I have, which is how much of the Health Care Access Fund are we now spending annually, which will be added to this increase? So how much
Maybe you said that, but I didn't hear that answer.
Mr. Godfrey?
Mr. Chair, members, Senator Anderson, is your question how much is currently being spent?
Yes.
Actually, it might be helpful to just refer you. I think you all have this longer one-page sheet. This is the Healthcare Access Fund balance statement, which includes all the provisions that are in the bill.
Yeah, but you can really read this.
Oh, yeah.
It isn't fair.
And if you look online, probably the best line to look on here to try to get at your question is on line 25, and that shows you the appropriation for Minnesota Care. And you can see that in 09 it'll be $362 million. Mm-hmm. Then it adds into some smaller provisions that are current law. And you can see it also adds all the provisions that are in the bill. And you go to the bottom here where it says Minnesota Care on line 48, Minnesota Care subtotal direct. It's $402.3 million in 09. That's the amount that would be spent in the Minnesota Care program if the bill was to pass. There's also some other uses below, you can see, to the University of Minnesota, some administrative costs and so on. And those are all added up on line 63 in the total expenditure. And for fiscal year 09, that's $471 million.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, in the governor's recommended budget cuts, he proposed not doing some of the increases that we had in our last year's budget bill. Are those reflected in the spreadsheet that we went through, or are you keeping
with what
we did?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Higgins, no, we're not making those reductions.
Okay.
Senator Berglund, did I understand that the governor is in support of this proposal? Do we know that? Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, the framework of the proposal has been negotiated with the governor's office. The idea that we would expand people currently eligible for the programs was one of the items agreed to. The level of the expansion was not agreed to. But the sources of funding for the bill, the structure of the bill, the payment reform, all of those items were part of the framework that was negotiated.
So, Mr. Chair, what's the gap in agreed spending on health care? Do you know? Can you tell us that?
Well, the major difference is what we would use the health care access fund for.
So none of that is agreed to? Mr. Chair, none of the health care access fund spending is agreed to by the governor at this point?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, that's right.
Okay. Senator Dill. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I got here a little ahead of time. I thought the meeting was going to start at 8, so I had time to read some stuff here before the meeting started. And there's a lot of letters and from people, organizations supporting what's going on here. And I only saw two that raise some questions and concerns, and one is from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and the other is from the
eight.
Minnesota Business Partnership.
Eight.
And there the Minnesota Business Partnership and the Chamber are zeroing in on the savings recapture assessment, reinvestment assessment. And I don't know what the Chamber says that they think that this may be challenged under ERISA. They're calling it an additional premium tax likely to be challenged under ERISA. Is there any, and then the Chamber also has a couple other objections here. Is there anything that can be done to accommodate some of their concerns?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dill, the recapture assessment is modeled after the state of Maine. They've been collecting it for, 4 or 5 years now. It has not been challenged under ERISA. It's been challenged under other grounds, and the state has been upheld in every lawsuit. We have said that we would be happy to look at a different funding source if the Chamber or the Business Partnership can come up with one that meets the conditions of the agreement, and they have not produced one yet. the agreement with the governor was that we would not expand coverage until we had reached demonstrated a certain level of savings out of the healthcare system. And that's what we're trying to do in this bill. We agreed that we would recapture a third of the savings, whatever they were, for reinvestment purposes, and that's what we're doing in the bill. And I do not believe that this will be found to be a violation of ERISA. And if you remember, Senator Dill, when we originally passed Minnesota Care, the same thing was said about the provider tax, that it would be found to violate ERISA, and it was not.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Dill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund or Senator Rosen, as I look down the chamber's paper here, there's a lot of things they do support, and I guess there's three opposes or four listed here. And I looked at the other letters, and they all appeared to be supportive. At this point in the legislative process, can you identify any other organizations that may have some concerns or some, you know, that would be opposing it for one reason or another?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dill, we've had testimony in various committees of opposition from various insurance agents. They believe that the insurance exchange provides competition for them. I believe the insurance exchange provides about a new pool of about 9,000 people who will be able to afford to buy insurance who haven't been buying it before this, and they would be paid commissions if they sign them up. So they just have to go out and get people to buy insurance from them. There'll be more people doing that. But without the exchange, it will make it very difficult for those small businesses to administer their 125 benefit. And so we feel the exchange is an important part of the bill.
Just one more question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hill.
In Massachusetts, there was a mandate that everybody must buy insurance, and I didn't quite hear that today. Is there any requirement that everybody in the state of Minnesota have insurance in this bill?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dill, no, there is no mandate in the bill. There is a goal of achieving 97% coverage by the year 2013. And if we don't achieve that, then the Department of Health would come back with further recommendations about how they thought we could achieve it. We have a pretty high rate of insurance in the state of Minnesota, and so there's every reason to believe that we can achieve nearly universal coverage without a mandate, and that's what the goal of the bill is, to make it affordable, to make it easier for people to purchase, to give people choices about what they purchase, and to help our long-term care workers be able to get insurance through their jobs that would be affordable. We believe all of those things, plus the things we're doing to recruit people into Minnesota Care will help us achieve a greater number of insured people in our state without a mandate.
Further questions from the committee? Sarah Fishback, did you?
Well, are we going? Mr. Chair, I thought we were potentially going to hear from Department of Finance on some of that. That's what I was kind of waiting for.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, did you want to have some testimony from Finance?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to, you know, given that these still, I understand you said that they were okayed. You know, they still say preliminary. I'm wondering when will we have a complete fiscal note that is final? Because my understanding is this is going to the floor now, and I think due diligence would say in finance we should have complete and final fiscal notes.
Okay, fair enough. Is there anybody from finance who would
Mr. Chair?
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, I've had three
emails this morning on the tax going or from the hospitals. Am I the only one getting those emails, sir?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Vickerman, I think it would be fair to say that the hospitals would prefer a different source of financing for the public health portion of the bill. It is what we could get the governor to agree to. Other sources of financing would likely be vetoed, and there would be no public health program then. So the bill, we need to remember one thing, that hospitals and not-for-profit health plans are required to invest in their communities in order to have a not-for-profit status. And we would consider the hospitals would have a choice. They could choose to decrease some of their other investments if they when they pay this assessment, and we would consider them still meeting their obligations. If they choose to increase the amount, keep the same level of community investment they have today and pay the assessment, that would be their choice. They would not be required to do that. Remember also in the bill that we are giving the hospitals more revenue through the Minnesota Care Program by lifting the hospital cap.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Just a follow-up. Senator Berglund, I'm going to support the bill because there's a couple provisions in here that are very dear to me. One is the veterans issues. And the other one is as farmers out there, a lot of farmers don't have insurance. So you take a look at there's some maybe one bad part, but there's 99% good parts. So
the other part about the hospital assessment is it phases out. It helps us get this health improvement program started, but then it phases out, and we would anticipate by then we would have enough money in the assessment offset savings account to pay for the public health program without needing to continue to have an assessment on the hospitals.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, do you expect that this bill will reduce the uncompensated care at hospitals?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, definitely.
Ms. Miller.
Mr. Chair, Lisa Miller from the Department of Finance. Regarding the fiscal note, as was mentioned earlier, the portions of the fiscal note that have been completed to date are the Department of Human Services, the Department of Health, and the Department of Revenue. The agencies that are still working on completing the fiscal note are DUER, OHE, and the University of Minnesota. Because this is a fairly complicated bill and there were amendments made to the bill on Friday, we are still working with some agencies regarding their assumptions in the fiscal note and working to make sure that agencies in the consolidated fiscal note have similar assumptions on the bill.
So Ms. Sarah Fishback,
you can ask her.
So Ms. Miller, at least insofar as those agencies where the fiscal note is complete, finance is then satisfied with what you're presenting to us?
Mr. Chair, yes, we have reviewed and signed off on those agencies that I mentioned and have approved those portions of the fiscal note.
Understand that this is a complicated piece of legislation, and Senator Fishback makes the point that, you know, normally in the Finance Committee we like to have complete fiscal notes and can certainly accept, even though the document is titled preliminary, can accept your testimony, at least relative to those three agencies. Where are we with the other three?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the other agencies are close to completing their portions of the fiscal note. We hope to have a completed fiscal note by this afternoon if we can get those agencies to complete their work today.
And what's the, if you can give an approximation of the fiscal impact in terms of those agencies?
Mr. Chair, in terms of the agencies that are still working
yes.
on the fiscal note, Mr. Chair, I don't have that information with me. A couple of the agencies don't have information in the system, or at least they didn't late yesterday, and so I don't have an exact estimate of what that amount would be.
Do you have a guess?
Mr. Chairman,
Sarah Berlin.
We would not anticipate being appropriating any money to Dewar or the University of Minnesota or the Attorney General's office as a result of this bill. Really, the program that we have in the bill for the Level 3 payment reform is somewhat similar to the system that Dewar has today. You know, when you sign up for your health plan, you can see the clinics that you have choices of, and they're arrayed by their costs. That's a rudimentary system we would expect under the new program. It would be much more sophisticated because it would have outcome measures as well as costs. But it's not like Dewar has to reinvent the wheel here in terms of the process they use for determining how they would implement the system.
So if either can answer, what are we assessing in terms of those agencies if there's no direct appropriation through the agencies?
Well, there is.
What kind of a fiscal note do we anticipate for those agencies?
Mr. Chair, in terms of the Dewar fiscal note, the Dewar preliminary fiscal note has, as Senator Berglund mentioned, they will not likely have general fund costs in their fiscal note. They do have a discussion of what some of the potential savings and costs might be for the CGIP program, but I don't anticipate that they will have a cost in their final fiscal note.
Okay, and the others?
Mr. Chairman?
The others?
Mr. Chair, the University of Minnesota has a preliminary fiscal note that is showing, I believe, around $90 million a year in general fund costs. We are working with, as I mentioned earlier, we're working with some of the agencies on making sure that they are making similar assumptions on the bill, and so some of that work is ongoing.
So when you say general fund cost to the university, are you talking about anticipated savings through the transformation work, or are we talking about an actual appropriation on the part of the university?
Mr. Chair, the fiscal note for the University of Minnesota is still preliminary at this point, and I don't expect or am not certain at this point that that will be their final amount in the fiscal note.
Now, your testimony was that you anticipated, excuse me, and I'm sorry, there was a third agency.
Mr. Chair, OHG is still working on their portion of the fiscal note as well.
Office of Higher Education.
And any guess in terms of, or what are you trying to assess through them? Similar to Dewar or what?
Mr. Chair, the Office of Higher Education in their fiscal note commented on the the Office of Higher Education was commenting on some of the appropriations in the bill that were related to primary care and what those appropriations would mean for them.
Now, you indicated that you thought the three entities involved would have fiscal notes this afternoon. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, we hope to have a completed fiscal note by this afternoon.
So we would have that available, Senator Berglund, if you take up your bill on the floor tomorrow? Is that, Ms. Miller, would that be correct?
I assume if they're available later today that we would make copies for everyone.
Ms. Miller, Is that a correct assumption, statement, wish? What?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is as long as we can get agencies to complete their work on the fiscal notes by this afternoon and get it into the system and have adequate time to review all of the fiscal notes that haven't been signed off to date, we think that we might be able to have a final fiscal note, but sometime this afternoon.
Okay. Further questions from Ms. Miller?
Mr. Chair,
Fishback.
With all due respect, Senator Berglund, I know you've been working very hard. Does this have to be on the floor tomorrow? I mean, tomorrow would be Wednesday. I guess we are not meeting until after Easter at that point, but is there a reason that we need it on the floor tomorrow?
Well, I don't know. Senator Berglund, you're the author of the bill.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fishbach, it doesn't absolutely have to be on the floor tomorrow. It was a goal in order to then be able to focus our attention on the budget deficit.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I'm just wondering if there are still a lot of questions, I mean, about what's going on with the fiscal note. And I'm assuming now, you know, all these three preliminary that we have here, fiscal notes, are final. I mean, I'll cross it out and put final, I guess, from what the finance department says. But I'm just wondering if maybe other folks on the committee are comfortable with this, and I'm just the only one, but I'm just do want to express my concern about not having final fiscal notes on a piece of legislation this big.
I guess I had the advantage, and I appreciate that, Senator Fishbach. Yeah, Senator Dill mentioned that he thought the meeting began at 8, so he had a chance to do some extra reading, and I went through the fiscal note pretty thoroughly last night from about 9:30 on, and I recognize other members have not had the opportunity. You know, it's a question of obviously what members of the committee are comfortable with. Your vote and everybody else's vote counts equally. If members are not comfortable, obviously we can lay the bill over. We can defeat the bill. We can pass the bill to the floor, whatever action the committee wishes.
It's a pass-through.
Sarah?
Am I the only one who's not comfortable?
Mr. Chairman, I think that both Dewar and the University of Minnesota fiscal notes are in regard to what they assume the new system will save or cost them. And because it's not the type of thing that they're really used to doing a fiscal note about, it has been taking them longer to get the fiscal note done, and it has taken a while for them to understand what the advantages of payment reform might have to their healthcare delivery system in terms of producing cost savings. And I think, you know, we just need to be clear that this is not, you know, like your standard fiscal note where we're requiring them to create a new program at the University of Minnesota. It's in the area of speculation as to what kind of cost savings they would be generating. And, you know, obviously, as we go forward with this, if this payment reform is not generating cost savings, there would be mid-course corrections made. The whole thing is predicated on the fact that when you pay for everything to be done in a doctor's office, you get what you pay for. You get volume. You don't get quality. You don't get good outcomes all the time. And when you change the payment system to reward people for quality and good outcomes, you can have savings in the system, but it's not always so easy for people who are working on these fiscal notes to understand what that might be.
Sarah Pappas.
Just in terms of the Office of Higher Education, it seems to me that the only thing in the bill for them is really a pass-through. to the, you know, some of the family practice residency programs that aren't run through the University of Minnesota or Mayo. So, Senator Fischbach, I don't think that agency should have, you know, an issue. I don't know why they didn't get their fiscal note done, but I don't see what else is in there for them.
Mr. Godfrey?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, the Office of Higher Education fiscal note was really advisory in nature. They looked at the blank appropriation, and then they just proposed, you know, plug number, mm-hmm. say $1 million. And they said, well, with this $1 million, this will get you X slots in at different institutions. Mm-hmm. So it was really advisory to help us figure out how to fill in the plug number.
Yeah.
And we settled on the $1.25 million. And that's the only discussion that they have in their fiscal budget.
Senator Betzel.
Hi, Mr. Chair. The doer part with CGIP is actually something that comes within the jurisdiction of the State Government Budget Division. And, you know, I'm not shy about, you know, bringing bills in to see what they say if it's within my area. But all the indications that, you know, we had in my office was that there was not going to be any impact whatsoever. And so, you know, we just didn't see a need to, you know, bring the bill in just to find out there was no impact. So we haven't seen the final note, but that's the indication we had.
When you say impact, you mean general fund impact?
Yes. And on CGIP as well, too.
Well, we've had a presentation on the bill, presentation on the spreadsheet, the other fiscal impacts of the bill. Obviously, members can ask any further questions, debate amendments, whatever action members would like to take. To be fair, Senator Fischbach, I'm trying to recollect over the years, but occasionally we have passed bills out of this committee without a final fiscal note. Obviously, this is a more significant piece of legislation, so it's a little bit unusual in that regard, but that would not it would not be precedent-setting to do so.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas.
I was just curious because we did see the bill in my committee, and at that time there was no discussion whatsoever of impact on the University of Minnesota. I mean, they didn't bring anything up. Senator Berglund didn't bring anything up, and my staff didn't bring anything up, so I'm not sure what that's all about.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, at that time we had no indication from them that they would be producing any other fiscal notes other than what would impact the family practice portion of the bill.
Right.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that if we send this out of here and we get a fiscal note this afternoon that looks astronomical and Senator Fischbach can't live with it, she could always move on the floor to send it back to the committee and we could take a better look at it. And that would be a possible idea to make you feel more comfortable about moving
if that would happen, I expect that Senator Cohen, you would be asking for the bill to come back to this committee yourself, and I would be very happy to accommodate that.
I guess my concern, and that certainly would be the case, if we had a chance to review the fiscal note, the question is, will we have the fiscal note? That's probably the larger concern.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
we've heard from Senator Betzel and Senator Pappas that they're not sure that there's an appropriate fiscal note to be generated.
I just hadn't heard about anything. But I think, Mr. Chairman, if we don't have satisfactory fiscal notes, then we just don't take the bill up.
That's fair.
Tomorrow, you know, if we don't get them by a session tomorrow, reasonable time to review them.
Well, Ms. Miller, listening to Senator Betzel and Senator Pappas, do you, and I realize this is a large bill, do you think we can get fiscal notes delivered to Senator Berglund and to our fiscal staff by the end of the working day today?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as I mentioned earlier, we hope to have a completed fiscal note by this afternoon, and we'd be happy to stay in contact with staff to keep them updated on the progress of that fiscal note.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
I'd just like to ask then if when Mr. Mossman receives that, if he would just share that with me and with Mr. Albrecht. if it's the University of Minnesota one.
I think that would be a good idea.
And the Office of Higher Education, too.
Yeah. Ms. Miller, if you can make sure, again, depending on what the committee does, when those notes are available, that you get them immediately to Senator Berglund, Mr. Mossman, and Mr. Godfrey, and then Mr. Mossman and or Mr. Godfrey make sure that those notes are delivered for the respective areas immediately to Senator Pappas and Senator Betzold. And Senator Fischbach, if you'd like to be included with that. Or
committee?
Mr. Mossman points out we can make sure everybody gets a copy. And then,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
That maybe, maybe that's the easiest thing is let's make sure that everybody on the committee gets a copy delivered to their offices. And then we'll see what shape those fiscal notes are. Obviously, Ms. Miller, that puts a lot of responsibility on yourself and the respective agencies to try to do that. So, further questions, comments, discussion on the part of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, if there are no more questions, then I would move that Senate File 3099 as amended be recommended to pass.
Okay, we have Senator Berglund's motion. Thank you, Ms. Miller. We have Senator Berglund's motion in front of us. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.